Hi, JJ.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm very excited to be speaking with you.
All right.
I always...
I'm excited to be speaking with you, too.
One of the greatest joys in my life is always speaking with stuntmen turned directors.
Nice.
And the Killer's Game, you have so much happening here that it's like my mind was racing, my eyeballs were racing. I do have a bone to pick with you, though. You didn't give me enough Scott Adkins.
Yeah, so, you know, listen, I go back to Undisputed 2 with Scott Adkins in 2002. Then we did the tournament, we did the Shepherd, I got him on Wolverine X-Men. Like, I've been working with Scott since way back, and I put him in Day Shift, my first movie. Look, I love Scott. Unfortunately, he was on another movie at the same time, so it was very difficult. We had to kind of pair it back because he was kind of, you know, he's so busy, he was between two movies.
Well, shame on him. He should have given you priority.
Well, it's all good, man. I'm super stoked to have him, and he's like one of my dearest friends and like a brother, and we'll be working together until we're done, until we hang up our gloves, for sure.
And he's so funny in this role as Angus. So funny.
I love it. I love it.
And that's something we don't get to see that often from Scott, is he is very good with comedy.
Scott Adkins is, he's a great actor, he's a great martial artist, he's a great human being. He's kind, he's generous, he's hardworking. Like, everybody needs a little Scott Adkins in their life, that's for sure.
Yes, they do, JJ, that's for sure. This whole thing. You have an amazing cast. It's going to be a treat for everybody to see Batista and Palm playing together because they were such a huge hit together in the Guardians of the Galaxy films. And to see them here is just a thrill. A thrill.
Well, there's definitely a chemistry there. I've known Palm since we did the remake of Old Boy back in like 2012 or 2011 or something like that. We became really good friends and trained her. And like, you know, we shot this during a strike, even though we had a SAG waiver. You know, we shot during the strike, we got a SAG waiver. But, you know, I never thought I would have gotten Palm because she was on Mission Impossible, but they didn't get a SAG waiver. So she became available. And I know that her and Dave had a shorthand. So it just worked out. I was super, super stoked to get her. I'm just a huge fan of hers.
And watching the two of them go tit for tat is just so delicious and delightful.
Yeah, I agree.
But everything, every bit of casting that you have here, JJ, is just amazing. I personally was thrilled to see Alex Kingston pop up in here. Been such a fan of hers for so many years.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got Ben Kingsley, who can do no wrong.
Amen.
And Terry Crews, who is an absolute scream.
Yes, no, we had a lot of fun. I work with Terry back on Expendables 3.
Uh-huh.
And I live in Pasadena. We don't live too far apart. I'm just a huge fan of his, and he's a force when he comes, and he's super prepared and super cool. Like, and having him and Dave, like that little scene of them in the graveyard was kind of my homage to, you know, Sergio Leone, when you had like Lee Van Cleef and Clint Eastwood in the same frame. It looked like two hard-looking dudes,
yeah.
You know, which two men. So I was a big fan of that scene and shooting their close-ups, and you know, they got on really good. They're all buddies. They were taking digs at each other. We had a great time out there.
And that's one of the great things about this film, JJ, and your casting, is the fact that so many of these guys, not to mention your stunt teams, have worked together before. They have rapport. Some have rapport on screen. Almost all of them have chemistry off screen that translates so well. You hit the casting jackpot with this one. You really did.
Well, you know, what do you do when you know you're going to go somewhere and get into a fight? You know, you call all your friends, and that's basically what I did. I mean, I was getting the movie was a big win. The movie came to me like 11 years ago to stunt coordinate it. Then it came back 3 years ago to be a second unit director for another director. Then Andrew Lazar saw a rough cut of Day Shift, and he offered me the movie to direct. And that was a big win. But getting Dave Bautista to star in it was like winning the Mega Million jackpot, you know, of jackpots. So when Dave landed, I just called all my friends. Then he was the one who put forward Sophia Boutella, which was a huge win because I was scared of the Maisie character. Because when you ask an actress if they can dance, they all say yes, but that doesn't mean like tap dance in the second grade. I mean, I needed a real dancer.
Right.
And she's an amazing dancer and an amazing actress with great, with an amazing chemistry with Dave. So that was a huge win. Then I just called Marco, Scott, Lucy, Shayna, Palm, and Dave also brought Drew McIntyre from pro wrestling to be the other brother with Scott. So Dave brought some of his friends, I brought some of my friends, and we all became friends. And then when Sir Ben Kingsley threw his hat in the ring, we were all like, oh, shit, it's on now.
It's like, now we've actually got to work. We can't just have fun. We've got to work.
You know, man, he had more, I think Sir Ben had more fun on that movie. He was laughing, he was cutting up, and even at the end when he said, don't hate the player, hate the game, before he... you know, pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
He goes, JJ, what's that mean, mate? And I was like, that's kind of some gangster shit, sir. And he goes, I don't understand a word of it. And I was like, well, I don't understand a word of what you're saying either, but it sounds cool. And we both started laughing. And there you go. That's how we did it.
Well, and that's something that I love with the dialogue. You've got a lot of really silly one-liners that a lot of people, I think, they're going to think they're like dad jokes and things. You know, you mess with the bull, you get the horn. Not horns, things like that, that are just so fun. And the way these actors are delivering these lines, it just heightens it. So we get a really beautiful blend of comedy and action here.
Thank you. I'm super stoked. You know, I'm super, super grateful that I got to do this movie. I had such a good time. You know, I'm just very, very, very stoked about it.
Well, and you should be. You really should be, because it's very difficult to pull off action and comedy. And I think one of the great things that you did, and I'm guessing you probably were, in addition to shot listing, you were storyboarding, especially with all of the action, all of the individual stunt pieces.
Technically, I don't storyboard. I made a career of stunt-bizzing things for years. That's how I actually learned how to shoot and cut. So we just stunt-bizzed everything. And, you know, when you've been directing second unit for a long time, you know what second unit directing is, right? So I feel like it's where the wheelhouse for where you, it's a pressure cooker.
Yep.
Because you have to be a responsible filmmaker, and you have to come in on time and on budget, but at the same time, you have to not kill someone going 85 miles an hour. So it adds another layer of responsibility that most directors don't have to deal with. So, you know, after 12 years of second unit directing three or four films a year, directing a comedy scene, if you have good comedians, it's not that hard. You point the camera and you give them an opportunity and you just catch the timing.
Something that you also add in here is the whole idea of dance and Sophia's character of Maisie. And you open the film, you've got that incredible dance sequence. But this is where your previs, this is where your editing really shines, JJ, are on your cuts, where a lot of scenes are transitioning from dance to the action, the precision of dance, the movement of dance, and you cut right into a spin that somebody's doing with a martial arts back kick. And you go back and forth with this, and it looks so fantastic to have that precision and of those two disciplines married so beautifully. And you even get the character of Botas, who incorporates tango and flamenco into his martial arts.
That's right.
The marriage that you have here with the action, with the dance, the elegance of dance. And when you look at the precision, you take a look at Love Doll as he's lining up shots for the long-distance sniper kill shots. You see that, the meticulous nature of it. You see the meticulous nature of the moves that Botas has with his dancing, the moves that Maisie has with the dance company. And the visual parallel there, it's a really strong metaphor.
Thank you.
Would have loved to have actually seen, just for my own joy, to actually have superimpositions of the dance and some of the action.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Like, dance and core. So, listen, this being a fight coordinator and a fight choreographer or a stunt coordinator or a second director, like, when you're doing choreography, one of the things I learned when I did the movie X-Men Wolverine Origins, we were training Hugh Jackman to do all these fights. Now, Hugh's not a fighter. Hugh comes from song and dance.
Yep.
And when we were doing the choreography, he was counting. He was going 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It was like, what are you counting for? Because, you know, like, you watch out for that punch. You got to duck. But that's the way that he clocked the timing. You know, dancers and fight choreography kind of go hand in hand because it's choreography. And it's either to a beat or to a rhythm, or if they turn the music off, it's to a count. And it's just a different way of looking at it. So, you know, yeah, I wish I could take credit for the dance choreography in the opening, but I can't. We had a great dance choreographer, and Sophia had a lot to say about that as well because of her background. But in the coverage of that, we did shoot a viz for that. We took our iPhones out and shot a nice viz. And also, my fight coordinator, Felix Betancourt, who is an amazing, he comes from a wrestling background and a breakdancing background.
Oh, my God.
Which is a cool thing to mix. He was also there doing the vampire movement on Day Shift for me. So mixing, using that kind of style to kind of, you know, inform the marriage between the action and the dance, he was kind of one of the translators. Me and him, Justin, you, and Troy Robinson were kind of the translators, translating one to the other.
It's an incredible marriage there of these different disciplines. But I'm serious. I would love to have seen a superimposition of the dance and some of those action sequences. But
nice.
Something that I also appreciate that you did is while we have the setup for everybody and we get to meet everybody after the kill is assigned and everybody gets introduced, they all get their moment to shine with their particular disciplines, and you've got a lot of different action disciplines happening. You've got the motorcycle stunts happening, motorcycles and chains, you've got martial arts, you've got the usual quote-unquote run-of-the-mill explosions, bombs. And in the midst of that, there's humor. It's like you're looking at one of the triggers for the bombs, and it's like, this is the front, this is the back. And little things like that just add, but you showcase everything. And that's not easy to do, JJ.
The action diamond has a lot of facets, and if it doesn't have a lot of facets, it doesn't shine. But again, I wasn't trying to make an action movie. I was trying to make a love story that had a train wreck with a ridiculously fun action movie. So it's kind of the way that was that's how I got Dave to do it, and that's kind of in my head, I was like, look, the action's going to be awesome just because I'm going to call my friends and they're going to help out, like all the Scotts and the Marcos and everyone's going to come and bust up the action with us, and we're going to, it's not hard. The hard part is time. We just didn't have a lot of time. We shot the movie in 42 days.
That's
like getting the layers and the characters right with the action for me was one of the funnest parts. I'm a big fan of bad guys versus bad guys, but there's good bad guys and bad guys.
Yep.
Basically, he's a hitman. So, you know, I love the idea of that. If it was cops and robbers, there'd be gray areas there, or there'd be lines there, black and white lines there, where you're like, oh, I can't do that, can't do this. But this was, for me, was a perfect storm. The way it all happened, we didn't have a ton of time to prep it. I think we prepped it for like 6.5-7 weeks. Jumped into shooting. You know, everybody's schedule was a little bit wacky, so people were flying in, flying out. We shot it a little bit out of order. But, you know, I could taste, when I was reading the script, when James Coyne and I sat down to do the revisions on the script that I had originally got, I could already taste what the taste of the explosions was going to be like. I could already smell the exhaust of the motorcycles, you know. So I had it in my head. I had a very strong mental image of what we were going to do, and then just you know, finding the right venue. The location offers a ton of targets of opportunity for fight choreography and vehicular manslaughter, etc. So you know, that was how we factored it in. We came with a plan, and then we found the venues and made some adjustments, and, you know, there you go. We're tripping out on Killer's Game.
I love the structure where, you know, Joe tries to get everybody, gets them all to the Schatzberger Castle. And that, to as you move through, and this is something that you and your second unit and your cinematographer, that you all did so well, is you use all the space within there.
That's right. So, yeah, man, so that idea of getting them all to one place came from the movie A Bronx Tale. tale.
Uh-huh.
Because that's not how it went originally. It went differently. The original script that I got 10 years ago or 11 years ago and the one that I read 3 years ago when I was going to second you direct it took place in London. But the one that we got, so we changed it. And in the Bronx Tale, when the motorcycle gang comes in the bar, he goes and locks the door and he says, "Now you can't leave." And I always thought that was super gangster that he did that. I was mm-hmm. like, whoa. He locked himself in that bar with a bunch of bikers and told them they can't leave now and ambushed them. So I wanted to do something like that, and we wanted to weaponize the castle, whether there be deer horns on the wall or, you know, whether it be a sword room, whatever. Like, we wanted to weaponize everything. And because Joe Flood is a lone operator, he doesn't have anybody watching his six. He always has a trap.
Yep.
For him. Like, he sets traps, so it's like, set them up, let them fall in the trap.
Well, and before we even get to the castle, I have to say, Joe's apartment, wow. Wow.
The Goyang crew, right, with the Korean crew. Those are I love that scene. Those are other characters that we put in there. So I was stationed in Korea in 87, 88 when I was in the Army, and I fell in love with Korea and everything Korean. You know, I competed in Taekwondo for years and mm-hmm. years and years before I got this business. So I wanted to do justice to that, and I'm a big fan of Boy George. That's why he's singing.
Yeah, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? Yeah.
Yeah, man, I think we smashed with that one. That was a lot of fun.
But Matt Gant, his production design, outstanding.
He's a gangster, man. Matt G is a gangster. He'll take a dollar and turn it into, he'll turn it into a pile. He's great.
It was so striking to see Joe's apartment and to see the concrete, the gray, and the simplicity of it. And yet the complexity within that when, the Goyang fight starts out. Really beautifully done. Similarly, the way the castle is apportioned. And then the church. You desecrated a church. You blew up the church. JJ.
Strangely, we weren't supposed to do all that in that it was a crypt next to a church. And we weren't supposed to do as many pyros as we did. But I asked for forgiveness, not permission. And, look, at the end of the day, my production designer, my director of photography, like, the movie was shot in the beginning, different light. We lit it different for the love story than we did for the action sequences. We dressed Dave in softer clothes. I had him shave, put his hair, did his hair on top, had him comb his hair nice and clean shaven. And he was like, "Oh, I don't usually wear clothes like this." I said, "Look, man, it's going to make you look different. It's going to make you look... You know, it's going to pay off in the love story." And, sure enough, he's such a good-looking dude. He's a handsome devil. He was like, "Oh, I don't want to look good like this." I said, "Are you kidding me? You look like a million bucks. Dude, you look awesome."
He did.
And then once the action starts, we change the lighting to make it look a little more rough and a little more desperate.
Mm-hmm.
But hats off and respect to my, production designer, my director of photography, my costumer, my prop department. Mad props to my stunt brothers who I'm always on the road with Justin Yu, Troy Robinson, Felix Betancourt. Like, those guys we go all over the world and destroy things and jump on planes and do it all over again. So, it's for me, getting to do this movie was such a huge win, and I'm super proud of what we did, and I'm super grateful for the team that I had, not just on camera, but off camera as well.
And I have to say, your cinematographer, bringing Flavio in, I'm a huge admirer of Flavio's work, have been for a while, but something that he does really well, and I think it suits the Killer's game exceptionally well, is you see his work in Retribution. Takes place primarily inside a car. You see him in Nonstop, there again, in a contained environment. Jungle Cruise even has some very contained areas. And that's exactly what you have here. So he knows how to work within those confined spaces, but with big results.
Yeah. I like to move the camera a lot. I mean, when it comes to the camera movement, he was amazing the way he lit it. I love his lighting design.
Yeah.
And we moved the camera a lot. He's a real ally, a real asset. And I love Flavio. I can't wait to work with him again.
I absolutely must ask JJ about the incredible needle drops that you have interwoven with score, with some classical. Your needle drops, you got James Brown, you've got Culture Club, you've got Wild Thing, you've got...
Yeah, I mean, I had to get a part-time job at McDonald's to help pay for all that. So just so you know, on my first movie, Day Shift, I cast Snoop Dogg, and we had Jamie Foxx as the lead, and, you know, they both have Grammys, and, you know, they have a lot of trophies. And I cast Snoop because I also told him, I'll make you an action star, but I need your help with the music. And when I learned so much about music from Snoop and Jamie on that movie and how it affects the audience. And yeah. One of the things that Snoop said to me, he said, familiar is good. Familiar takes you people to a place of nostalgia and makes them warm inside. You know, they remember where they were when they heard the song the first time. It's like a moment, you know, like, so I really leaned on those songs because I'm Gen X, but I also wanted to do something for Gen Y or the millennials as well. Like, we tried to, everybody trying to get represented, but it's more of a love letter to the Gen X with the needle drops, like, you know, the Boy George, the James Brown, because I grew up listening to nothing but Elvis and James Brown when I was a kid on my grandfather's 8-track stereo in his truck. That's all he had was James Brown and Elvis looping. So yeah, I was just super stoked about that, and I learned a lot from my first movie about the way it makes an audience feel. The first time I saw Day Shift in a theater was when we screened it before it came out, and Jamie was like, hey, let's go. I said, wait a minute, I want to watch everybody. And when the movie opened with, you know, California knows how to, and everybody's head started bouncing, and I was like, oh shit, like, now I get it. You don't really know when you're in the editing room, you know, like, as a second unit director, you don't know about post, you only know about prep and principal photography. But post, like, listening, watching the movie with score and needle drops on a screen in the editing room isn't near as powerful as watching it in the theater, and you have the whole theater, like, everyone watching starts bouncing their heads, and you see them tapping their knees. It's like, whoa, that's powerful. You know, you're hitting all their senses.
And the songs that you did pick are well known, you know, not just for Gen X, but for many generations.
Yeah, that's right.
And they signify a particular scene and a particular character, such as Wild Thing, that's playing during the pole dancing, where we've got switchblades and stilettos happening.
Yep. That's right.
And with Botas, Please Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, is really
that's
interesting,
right.
When you're doing flamenco or tango, but it works. And
yep.
It's the minutia that you pay attention to. Before I let you go, I have to ask, blood work. You have some of the greatest squashed heads, exploding blood. Talk to me about what you were looking for with bloodletting in this one, because I just thought, we got blood exploding on walls. We've got heads getting stomped with a steel-toed boot and blood squashing out everywhere. Talk to me about those choices.
Every time that you have the upper hand on the audience, you've done your job as a filmmaker, especially as an action filmmaker. When you get them to jump and go, oh, shit, or jump in their seat or shift in their seat or make them uncomfortable. Like when we break the glass and we put the girl's neck on the glass and run it over there, everybody squirms. Anytime I can do that, I have done my job as an action filmmaker. And, you know, telling that love story was doing my job as a filmmaker.
Uh-huh.
So, like, the action part for me, like, because I have, for so many years of prepping movies for other people and coming up with gags, and they would go, oh, I don't want to do that. That gag immediately goes in my bag of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I'll use that, because, you know, explaining it to them, maybe they don't understand how cool it could be. So, yeah, we just reached deep into our bag of tricks, me and my action team, and created targets of opportunity from the set. And it's just having the upper hand on the audience by maybe not, like, when you break the glass, you subliminally telegraph that there's broken glass in the room, but you don't expect her neck to get put on the pane and drug over there.
Right.
Or Botas getting his leg blown off. Like, it's like you want to kind of foreshadow it, but you don't want them to understand exactly what it is till you want them to know it.
Yeah.
That's having the upper hand. And that's good. That's advanced action filmmaking.
And you show it with pieces. You know, like Botas, you see just his boot and a foot. You don't see any. The rest of him is apparently gone.
He might come back with a rifle peg leg.
He could. He could.
Botas comes back with an AK-47 peg leg.
And of course, I think one of the coolest things you pulled off was having the teeth go up in the air with the Goyang Gang. That was hilarious. Hilarious.
Anytime you can do something, it's so hard to do something that hasn't been seen before. I mean, that's kind of our job, though. Like, to never say, well, let's just do the old. So, not yeah, we've seen that.
Yep.
But knocking them out and catching them, I've never seen that. So when I was like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if they caught the teeth? And everybody was like, oh, I don't know, man. I said, let's try it. And then I was like, oh, we're doing that for sure, because no one's done that before. So it's those things that try to give it its own vibe. And the violence is cool, trying to make it cool and a little bit cruel, but cooler than cruel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's got to be fun, you know, not too vicious, even though he's stomping the guy's head in. But, you know, it's got to be fun at the same time. You know, they're out to kill him, and all bets are off. Anybody who plays the killer's game is fair game. That's the way it goes.
And that's just it. That's what you've done. It's because you have the comedic tones in here and the comedy. That lets you push the envelope further because you have that sense of humor that is underlying. So, 100%. Just so well done, JJ. Just, am I going to get a sequel?
God, I hope so. From your lips to God's ears, let's go. I'm ready to leave this weekend.
Well, I'm ready for another one.
Me too.
Oh, JJ, thank you so, so much. This has been fabulous getting to talk with you about the Killer's Game.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Here's hoping everybody sees the Killer's Game.